On today's edition of Hoops 360, Spark star Nneka Ogumike stops by the show to talk new CBA and what it's like to play with Kelsey Plum in LA. Plus, we break down the Commissioner's Cup race, how the Liberty went undefeated, and who is going to punch their ticket in the West. What is up, everybody? Welcome into Hoops 360. It is an exciting, jam-packed, star-studded episode on today, June 17th. Why does June 17th matter? Because today is the final day of Commissioner's Cup action before we get to the Commissioner's Cup final later in June. So we will break down all of the competition and the takeaways from the East and the West. So we will be joined by WNBA reporter Jackie Powell, who joins the show. She will do a full Commissioner's Cup breakdown, and we'll also do a deep dive on the New York Liberty, who have punched their ticket to the Commissioner's Cup final. How did they turn some early season ups and downs around to now being on a 7-game win streak? We'll get into that with Jackie Powell. Plus, do not miss it. The one, the only, the superstar, Nneka Ogumike joins Hoops 360. We chat with her about the LA Sparks start to their season. And of course, as the WNBPA president, how the CBA negotiations are coming to fruition at this point in the season. She's also a Time 100 Most Influential People in Sports list. I mean, what can't Nneka Ogumike do? But let's get into it before we're joined by Jackie Powell. A little bit of breaking news that came out Wednesday morning in the WNBA. It was announced that in 2027, the schedule will be expanding to 50 regular season games from the 44 games that we have currently in the W. So that'll expand in 2027, and in 2029, it'll expand even further to 52 regular season games. Important to point out, this was a stipulation that was negotiated on and agreed to in the most recent CBA. But in 2027, the season cannot go past November 21st. And beginning in 2028, the season can't go past November 30th. So the season will be elongated to accommodate for those extra games, but it cannot go past November 21st and then November 30th in 2028. A couple of thoughts on that, because I think there's some good and I think there's some questions that I still have about this. Number one, the good. This shows the growth of the game. More games means more demand. More games also means more tickets, more merchandise that can be sold, more opportunities for teams to open up their buildings to fans. It also means more real estate on network television, which means more ad revenue, more dollars in the pockets of those in the WNBA. So when we have talked about the CBA and the money that the players felt like they were owed, a big question was, well, is this level of growth sustainable? The league has never experienced this much growth they've seen over the past couple of years. Well, locking up 50 regular season games and then 52 once 2029 rolls around just proves that the WNBA is creating more opportunities for growth, more opportunities for revenue, and more opportunities for eyeballs to be on the product and butts to be in seats. So overall, this is a good thing. This is the league growing into what we all think it can become. But there's another side of that as well. 50 regular season games, and then 52 in just a couple of years, that's 6 to 8 more games, 6 to 8 more opportunities for players to get injured, 6 to 8 more road trips, 6 to 8 possibly more East Coast to West Coast long flights. If the season will be expanded, when it's expanded, I should say, rosters also need to be expanded. More games just puts that much more, you know, pressure on the body. That puts that much more workload on the body. And that's not even counting the WNBA postseason, which also puts, you know, a big amount of load on the body. So while it's a good thing, while more games means more opportunities for the WNBA, what comes next? Because I think it's only fair, I think it's only right, if you're going to talk about player safety and player health, If you have more games, we need to have more players available. So, of course, that's the big news on Wednesday. We'll continue to get into all of that. Cassandra Negley will join us next week. She'll be back into the pod. We miss Cass yearly, but she's taking a very well-deserved vacation. We'll get into that and what that might mean on the business side of things and the basketball side of things on next week's edition of Hoops 360. But first, let's catch up with our friend, WNBA reporter for NBC Sports and the Nine Sports, Jackie Powell, on all things Commissioner. Cup. We welcome in a very trusted voice throughout all of the women's basketball spaces. She's a WNBA reporter, writer, and podcaster. She covers the New York Liberty and all things WNBA and women's hoops. She is everywhere. Jackie Powell joining us here on Hoops 360. Jackie, thank you so much for your time and for hanging out with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Happy to have you. I've heard so many great things from Cass, who's enjoying her vacation. So we get to have some fun in her honor. While she's enjoying some very well-deserved time off, I want to start with what's wrapping up officially today, and that is Commissioner's Cup play. Of course, we'll have the Commissioner's Cup Championship later this month, but we have in the East, the New York Liberty have already punched their ticket to the Commissioner's Cup Championship. Do want to get to the East and the Liberty, a team that you know very, very well here in just a moment, and focus in on the West. So to all of our listeners, just a heads up, we are recording this podcast on Wednesday afternoon before a lot of really critical and important games go down tonight. The Minnesota Lynx and the Las Vegas Aces are tied atop the West standings at 5-1 in Commissioner's Cup play. So the Lynx can clinch their spot in the Commissioner's Cup Championship with a win over the Sparks tonight and an Aces loss to the Phoenix Mercury. The Aces can punch their ticket with a win tonight against the Phoenix Mercury. The reason why those two, why the Aces, you know, kind of have an edge here with a win tonight is because they beat the Lynx head-to-head. So head-to-head and also point differential matters here. Jackie, when you look at, you know, the Lynx and the Aces and kind of how they're playing right now, wildly different expectations coming into this season. What has maybe surprised you the most?
On a previous podcast, I called Cheryl Reeve Elphaba, and I meant it as a compliment because as those of you who are musical theater people, just like I am a musical theater person, Elphaba from Wicked is a witch with magical powers and very powerful and intelligent. And so when you think about Cheryl Reeve and what she was able to do, essentially the Dallas Wings took half of her front court, and Nafisa Collier has not played a single minute this year. For her to build this, the way this team functions around a second overall draft pick and a power forward in Natasha Howard, who many thought was out of her prime and sort of toward the end of her career, it's been incredibly impressive. And what we know about Cheryl Reeve, and this is better example than even her previous Lynx teams that had the folks that were lost in free agency in these past 2 years, you know, that team that made it to the 2024 finals and then the team that fell short in the semifinals last year. I mean, it's so much more of a surprise just because those two teams, they had so much shooting, so much shooting. And it was sort of like, oh, this is such a modern type team. And they play smaller. And so I was like, how is the spacing going to work for this group? But you know what? I mean, Cheryl has established a lethal pick and roll between Olivia Miles and Natasha Howard. And she has made role players who haven't played well in, you know, the past year or so in Nia Coffey and, you know, I think they're still looking for a little bit more role player bench help. But, you know, Kayla McBride has been holding down the fort, maybe not shooting as well, but she has a huge defensive load that she's got to carry just because Courtney Williams and Olivia Miles are not the best perimeter defenders. But Cheryl Reeve's system, in some way, shape, or form, allows them to be serviceable So that was a long-winded answer in saying that is there anyone who wasn't surprised by the Lynx? I don't know. Like, I thought they were going to be a playoff team for sure because of Cheryl and her magical powers, but I didn't think they'd be the best team in the league first month of the season.
If you think calling someone Elphaba is an insult, you're not paying enough attention to Wicket. Watch it again. It's a compliment. But we always say here on this show, we have a list of a few people who we will trust with every ounce of our being. And Dawn Staley, we trust. And Sandy Brondello, we trust. And Becky Hammon, we trust. And Cheryl Reeve, we trust. Because one thing that we know about Cheryl Reeve coach teams is they are going to play defense. And this Lynx team, this edition of Minnesota, is absolutely positively no different. But you add in this spark plug of Olivia Miles, who is such an elite passer, who is not intimidated or overwhelmed by the level of play in the WNBA in the slightest. So the Lynx so quickly went from a team that I thought, it's fair to say they'll take a step back. They lost a lot of pieces, like you mentioned. Nafisa Collier's recovering from an injury. Like, of course we trust Cheryl Reeve, but come on, she doesn't have a large bag of tricks to be working with. Yet here we are with the Minnesota Lynx firmly standing as one of the best teams in the WNBA. And you look at the other side with the Las Vegas Aces. Look, they are fresh off of a big-time butt-whooping of epic proportion that we saw just a couple of days ago against the Dallas Wings, 96-66 loss by the Las Vegas Aces. It's not uncommon to see 66 points dropped in, the first half from this Vegas team, but to see this as a final score is fairly staggering. Jackie, I've been really enjoying watching this Western Commissioners Cup race. I expect to see tonight. Now, again, this is Wednesday afternoon before we see the Las Vegas Aces take on the Phoenix Mercury. I expect to see Vegas come out with the thunder of the gods after a loss like that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Asia Wilson said it herself. She said, sometimes I don't like when we get wins because it doesn't necessarily push us to try to rectify our deficiencies. And what she was alluding to is the fact that in the game before the butt whooping, the Aces won by only 3 points. It was 197 to the Lynx. And so that was sort of like, okay, like our defense maybe wasn't up to par. And then they get there to Dallas, and what happens? They look like zombies defending the ball out there. So yes, I anticipate this will be a big response from Las Vegas, but also I maintain the opinion that the Phoenix Mercury are a team that you can gain your confidence back against when it comes to defending, because the Mercury's offense has been not very good this year. And Kalia Copper had that 41-point game, but there is just not a lot there besides Kalia Copper and Alyssa Thomas. And so when the New York Liberty played the Phoenix Mercury twice in a row in Brooklyn, that's exactly what those games were for the Liberty. It was, okay, let's see if we can build some confidence with our defensive principles because this team is not an offensive juggernaut.
Very nice way of putting it is this is a team that you can get your confidence back against. It's a very, in the South, we have the saying like, oh, bless your heart. Like, it sounds really nice, but it's not a nice thing, but it sounds nice. Hey, it's a team you can get your confidence back against. Sounds nice, but it's really not. But that's the reality of where the Phoenix Mercury have been. So I fully expect the Las Vegas Aces to beat the Mercury tonight and to punch their ticket to the Commissioner's Cup Championship. We'll continue to get into that, what that means, that matchup, and maybe what that could be an omen for moving forward whenever we hit on the New York Liberty here in just a moment on the East side. Before we advance, though, I think we would be remiss to not at least mention that the Dallas Wings have hung around in this West conversation. This young team with AZ Fudd coming in as the number one overall pick, and with Paige Bueckers coming into year two, with Jose Fernandez taking over year one as the head coach in Dallas. Dallas went from a team that was lottery team last year now to a team that is hanging on with the big boys in the West, for lack of a better term. What has been maybe your early impressions of this Dallas Wings team so far? Has their level of winning shown you that this is a sustainable way of winning?
If you're talking about, is this a team that is going to reach the playoffs? I say absolutely. I would be very surprised if this team were to miss the playoffs. I think this team right now, based on how they're playing, this is a team that's going to make it to the second round of the playoffs. Their offense is just too good not to. Although they could be like the Atlanta Dream of 2025, where it was like, okay, they played much better all season long, but then when it came to some late game execution, Stephanie White was just that much better than Carl Smesko. But, yeah. I mean, that is a discussion we can have later. But I think Jose Fernandez has just done an excellent job on the offensive end of maximizing his pieces while also getting buy-in from these different stars. Arike Ogunbowale is someone who there were questions about if she was going to stay in Dallas. There were questions about how she would be as the second fiddle rather than the first. What type of coach would be able to get her to buy in and play for a team rather than just herself? And so this is sort of what we've seen under Jose Fernandez. And this three-guard lineup offensively of Arike Ogunbowale, Paige Bueckers, and AZ Fudd, they've played well together, and I keep specifying on the offensive end just because defensively there are still major issues there. Ogunbowale is not your best defender, and neither is triple-double machine Jessica Shepherd. So it makes sense when you take a look at the offensive, defensive, and net rating that you've got the Wings way up top when it comes to the offense, and they're essentially mediocre when it comes to the defensive side of the ball. But also, you know, if you want to talk about, is this team a contender in year one or things of that nature, I think this team is so new. They are so, so new. And sometimes when you're that new, you gotta sort of go in the trenches with one another, and it's not necessarily guaranteed that just because you do so well during the regular season, the playoffs get twice as hard. So you've got so many young players, and essentially your leader is one of the younger ones in Paige Bueckers. Mm-hmm. So there was a great story written this week by my good friend and colleague Alexa Philippou, looking at the rise of the Dallas Wings and how, like, Paige Bueckers is sort of, she's really anxious to be competing in the playoffs. She really wants to be in that position. And so I think they're going to be in that position, but I think the expectations ought to be tempered in year one.
And look, this team wasn't going to be perfect. Under zero circumstances would a young team with, you know, a first-year head coach and a lot of new pieces that came in via free agency, nobody could have expected this team to be clicking, you know, on all cylinders at a championship-caliber level, and especially not on June 17th, 2026. But if you would have told a Dallas Wings fan, you know, this time last year, hey, fast forward 1 year and you're going to look like a team that's a playoff team. You could be a team that wins a playoff game. You could be a team that's actually relevant going into the fall. I think any Dallas Wings fan, Paige Beckers herself, would say, yeah, no, we'll sign up for that. We'll sign up for that trajectory of going from missing the playoffs altogether to now all of a sudden very much so looking like a playoff contender. Now, becoming a championship contender doesn't happen overnight. Of course, that would be the next step. And of course, that's the goal that everybody in that organization is looking toward. But if you say, hey, this year you're going to win a playoff game, lose in the second round of the postseason, I think that you would take that, especially considering where the Dallas Wings organization has been over the last couple of years. I feel like I'm a Dallas Wings cheerleader this year. I just love this team. I love what they did in the offseason. I love Jose Fernandez's philosophy. I love the culture that he's built. I love Paige Beckers' just her competitiveness. I love the fact that Arike Ogunbowale has said, oh, you thought they were going to move on from me this past offseason? I'm going to prove everyone wrong. Everyone said that this duo with Arike and Paige couldn't work. I'm going to prove you wrong. I just love the growth of this young team just from last year to this year and this past offseason.
Yeah, it's been incredibly exciting. I mean, I think we're going to see, I mentioned her before, but I think Jessica Shepherd is going to become a first-time All-Star just because she's been that good. So whenever that happens, I think that's definitely, that drums up fandom.
No doubt, no doubt. Let's take a transition into the East because that is locked up. The West will be decided tonight on Wednesday. The East has been locked up since Saturday. The New York Liberty went undefeated in Commissioner's Cup play. In fact, they're wrapping up Commissioner's Cup play on a 7-game winning streak. You know, the New York Liberty are no strangers to the Commissioner's Cup Championship. This is their third in the last 4 years. They went from losing 3 games in a row to now all of a sudden they're the hottest team in the WNBA. You know, look at the Commissioner's Cup standings at least. The Liberty are at the top 5-0, followed by the Atlanta Dream, Indiana Fever, and those are the only two teams above 500 in Commissioner's Cup play. Any of those standings or the way that things have kind of shaken out, does anything surprise you there, Jackie?
It's interesting because if you were to ask me this question before the start of the season, I would say, no, I'm not surprised. But if you were to ask me the same question around 2 weeks in to the regular season, I'd say it was a little surprising because the New York Liberty's ebbs and flows have been quite dramatic in New York. When are things not dramatic? Especially when the messaging in the Liberty's training camp was, okay, this is going to take some time learning a new coach's system offensively and defensively. And also they had a ton of injuries and absences to start the season out. Essentially, Sabrina Ionescu has played in 2 games to start this season. Satu Sabaly was in and out. She was essentially getting reconditioned from being out of basketball for so long because she sustained a concussion at the end of the 2025 WNBA Finals. And she then developed like a cyst on her skin that needed to be taken care of. So it was just, took a while. And she's been coming off the bench. Also, Leonie Fibish, one of their best defenders and sort of like a 3+, she was still completing her overseas season in Spain. And so one of those situations where she finishes, her team wins the Spanish league title, she flies right over to New York, didn't have a full training camp. And so that's sort of the situation they were in. Also, Benaja Laney Hamilton was out for a bunch of games in between due to personal reasons. She is coming back after a meniscus tear of her right knee that she sustained in, I think it was March of 2025. So she's been out for a long time. So when you have a lot moving in and out, and as a coaching staff, you don't really know each day which players you're going to have, that's going to lead to some turbulence. And that's sort of what we saw for those first, I want to say, 7 games of the regular season. But then here we are, and they've won, You said seven in a row?
Seven in a row.
So the tides have clearly turned.
And that's, I think, is what is such a good omen for the Liberty, because good teams can win games at full strength. Great teams, championship contending teams, just find ways to figure it out. They weathered the storm and learned lessons from it, and they're better because of it. And that's not to say that the New York Liberty won't continue to face some hiccups along the way of a 44-game season and into the postseason. Mm-hmm. But that's just to say that we've seen that. Like, we've seen even the New York Liberty in games that they won. Sometimes it didn't look great. Sometimes it was close games. I'm looking at that near overtime victory against the Washington Mystics earlier in the season. Like, I think everybody in New York just collectively was holding their breath in that game. So it's, you know, weathering the storm without Sabrina Ionescu. Satu coming back from, you mentioned she had a cyst earlier in the season, coming back and embracing her role off the bench when she's been a starter each of the last 3 years of her career and going to the WNBA finals last season. Not every player would take that so gracefully. Maybe not every player would embrace that role coming off the bench. But here Satu is averaging, 11 points per game and has been massive over the last couple of games. So, I mean, that's credit to the buy-in of this team. It's credit to Stewie and Jonquel Jones, the leaders of this team. That's credit to Chris DeMarco being able to come in after Sandy Brondello won a championship in New York. They moved from Sandy Brondello. Chris DeMarco has massive shoes to fill. And I know it's June 17th. I know it's early, but so far, this team is delivering.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think defensively, that's been where I've been really impressed. They went from being, I think it was eighth defensively during that first three and four span, all the way up to number two in the league. And you were sort of able to see they deploy this press zone, which is not very commonplace in the WNBA. And at first, Jonquel Jones told a bunch of us reporters that she was having some difficulty understanding how with this new defense, she could be aggressive in it. And so there were a bunch of clips of her not closing out on shooters and sort of being a bit lackadaisical. And she just didn't really know how she could function best in this defense. And so that's why you have practice time. That's why you have time to work these things out. And so this team has a much better idea of what it wants to get done defensively, of the communication that's required to be successful defensively. That was something that they didn't have earlier this season. Obviously, there was a period of time when both Leonie Fibish and B'nai Jelani-Hamilton were out, and that was when their defense was at their worst. Just those two are able to really serve as connectors on the defensive end. So, I mean, Sabrina Ionescu, she is going to raise the offensive ceiling. She really is. And we sort of got a little taste of it in their last game against the Mystics. It was actually, it wasn't glamorous statistics from her, but it was more, okay, she's not trying to force it. She's playing within the flow of the offense. She's driving and kicking. She's finding her teammates. She's organizing the offense. She's delivering crisp post-entry passes. You know, she's finding JJ and Stewie on the pick and roll. So the fact that that's sort of the floor of the offense, it's quite scary, isn't it?
It's scary. It's how I feel about the Lynx getting Fee back, getting Dorca back. It's how I feel about the Liberty getting Sabrina Ionescu back into the fold. And you mentioned her stat line. She played 26 minutes, 5 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. She had 2 turnovers in the process. Under a microscope, no, that's not a sexy little stat line in the slightest. But Chris DeMarco did say we just felt her presence out there, that the team felt her presence out there. I think it's fair to expect a ramping up period. You know, Sabrina's played one game, or has at least appeared in one game this season. This was really kind of felt like her season debut. So you can expect a ramping up period. You can expect Sabrina still kind of learning the gel and the vibe of this team and the rest of the team kind of joining her into the fold, that kind of stuff just doesn't happen overnight, especially when you're not physically 100% or you're getting back to 100%. But when you think about once Sabrina does get comfortable into the fold and this team starts clicking on all cylinders, I mean, to say championship ceiling, I think would be, you know, the understatement of a decade. But, you know, I mentioned this is their third Commissioner Cup championship in 4 years. The previous two trips to the Commissioner's Cup championship, they went to the WNBA Finals. The year that they won the Commissioner's Cup was the year that they lost to the Lynx in 2024. They won the Commissioner's Cup. They lost the Commissioner's Cup. They beat the Lynx, and then vice versa. When they won the Commissioner's Cup, they lost to Las Vegas in 2023. So this has been a good omen, at least to get to the finals for the Liberty in recent history. Jackie, what gives you confidence, or maybe not, that history could repeat itself?
I mean, sometimes the Commissioner's Cup is an indicator, as you mentioned, and sometimes it isn't. I actually wrote a column for NBC Sports about this very fact, where I looked at those trends. And so last year, the Commissioner's Cup didn't really mean anything when it came to the finals, and the same with the first year of the Commissioner's Cup. Sometimes teams go on runs during the playoffs, and they win against teams that they might be better matched up against, rather than, okay, Team X actually had a better season than Team Y. But when it comes to series play, it's a whole other ballgame. And then other times, it's simply the two best teams, and it becomes a bit of like a collision course, which is sort of what you were referring to. I think it's possible that the two teams that are in the Commissioner's Cup Championship Final, or yes, the Commissioner's Cup Final, could also make it to the WNBA Finals. But I think there are two other teams that are going to have something to say about that. I mean, if Minnesota doesn't make it, I think they will have something to say. And I also think the Atlanta Dream are going to have something to say about that. I believe that there's got to be two from that four that make it to the finals. So, you know, we're going to see. I think the Commissioner's Cup is actually a really good thing for people like us, because it allows us to attach a marker to sort of what has happened, and we can really track changes in a meaningful way. And so that's really what I'm going to take a look at. Yeah, so in some years it's been a good omen, but in other years there have been injuries, there have been circumstances that are difficult to predict. And so that's why I gave a little bit of a vague answer there. But I can't commit to saying, oh, absolutely, this is what is going to happen, just because it's been a little bit all over the map.
And it makes sense, right? A team that is at the top of the league in the middle of June or in late June usually can trend well for the course of a 44-game season. And then we've seen last year the Lynx, for example, in the Commissioner's Cup Final. Well, Nafisa Collier gets hurt. All of a sudden, that starts to derail a lot of things in your season, which could be a really, you know, a reason why the Lynx did not find themselves getting to the WNBA Finals. Same thing with the Fever. I mean, they were bitten by the injury bug more than any other team last season, another team that was represented in the Commissioner's Cup Final last year. So, of course, there's always reasons to point to of why these teams that are on an upward trajectory at this point in the season may not find themselves to their ultimate goal, you know, late in the season. But when I look at this Liberty team, you know, what can get them to a WNBA Finals? Well, it's Sabrina Ionescu, and it's Brianna Stewart, and it's Jonquel Jones playing like superstars and knowing their roles and executing their roles at a really high level. It's the depth of this team. We mentioned Satu Sabli coming off of the bench and averaging double-digit points. It's Maureen Johannes. It's Pauline Astier. It's Leonie Fibich. It's Benajelani Hamilton. So much depth on this team. So if that's why we think they can get to a WNBA Finals, if that's why we think they are championship contenders, Jackie, why do you think, or what could be a reason why they might fall short of that goal?
Oh, boy. I think I touched on it before. There are unpredictable factors at play. There could be an injury to a different member of the big three. You know, we saw what happened when Jonquel Jones and Breanna Stewart were out for around a month each, mm-hmm. and just how difficult defensively it was for that team to really get things accomplished. So that could be a factor. I also think we have to think about the FIBA World Cup break, where essentially you're going to have Breanna Stewart and Sabrina Ionescu most likely on Team USA. The Liberty are also a very global franchise, so you're going to have Leonie Fibisch and Satu Sabaly competing for Team Germany, as the FIBA World Cup is going to be hosted by Germany and take place in Berlin. You also have Han Shu, who is the Liberty's backup center. She will be playing for the Chinese national team, most likely, in that World Cup. So you have, there's a lot of international players on this team that will also be competing in that. And so, you know, you obviously don't want to hope for injuries. But besides the injury idea here, I mean, Chris DeMarco has never been in a WNBA playoffs before. He just hasn't. And it takes a very special coach to be able to have a large amount of success in that type of high-stakes environment. I will say that he's coached the Bahamas men's national team in a pressure-type situation. But that's also, that's not the WNBA finals. You're not, or the playoffs in general. You're having to coach your team. You're having to talk to the media even more than you do during the regular season. Emotions and tensions are really high. So how is he going to handle this? That's something that I'm going to be keeping my eye on as well. And also it's making sure that everyone is bought in, you know, that the players that have been all-stars in this league that are coming off the bench, that they feel secure and confident in themselves. You know, that might be happening now, but will things change? And so that's what being a head coach in the WNBA is all about. It's about really understanding personalities, really having a high level of emotional intelligence in addition to your schematic intelligence. And so those are going to be some of the considerations.
I think maybe only other reason that I could think of is the universe knows that New York City will not be able to handle two basketball championships in the same year. It's going to save New York City because, I mean, after the Knicks championship, if the Liberty win 1-2 and New York just sweeps basketball championships, the city may, in fact, burn down.
Yeah, you know, It's really interesting because the Knicks winning, the Liberty players were obviously very happy for them, especially when Mikal Bridges, when he was on the Nets, he would be in Barclays Center all the time, and they really appreciated that support. But the Liberty were previously owned by Knicks ownership, and if you don't know what happened there, please Google it because that could be a whole other podcast. And so it's just, it's a little awkward, you know, where it's like the coverage that the Knicks are getting and there's still like tiny amounts of Liberty erasure here and there. And so I think it's an interesting spot because it's sort of showing the women's sports and WNBA discourse community, okay, the coverage of the W and women's basketball in general has reached new heights, but it's still not at maybe a height that people want it to be. And so imagining, okay, you see the Knicks and the just what it does to an entire city, what happens? Like, are those fans going to be wanting more and will they hop on the WNBA bandwagon? Those are some thoughts that I do have about what's next.
And I do wonder how Joe Tsai has felt about all of this, you know, Knicks Liberty discourse. Joe Tsai is the owner of the Liberty and the Brooklyn Nets. Yeah. There is not only WNBA erasure, maybe that happens globally, but there's also Nets erasure that happens in New York City. The Liberty do not play in Madison Square Garden. They do play in Barclays Center, where the Brooklyn Nets play. So if I'm Josiah, I'm looking around thinking, wait, whoa, hold on. No, it is not under this group of just this umbrella of New York City basketball. It's not just the Knicks and the Liberty. Don't forget about us if we're here with the Brooklyn Nets. But it has been fun, at least on the MNBA side of things, to see the New York Liberty, or excuse me, the New Yorkers just embrace the New York Knicks. And I hope to see that same kind of energy and that same kind of support for the New York Liberty. Because when I heard that the Knicks brought New York its first basketball championship in 53 years, I felt some type of way about that. Because, mm-hmm. no, they didn't. It's been mm-hmm. 2 years. Hasn't mm-hmm. been that long of a drought, everybody. Mm-hmm. Jackie Powell, nobody knows this league more or better than you do. You can find her on NBC Sports. You can find her on the Nine Sports. She's a podcaster. She is a writer. She truly does it all. She is a jack of all trades and a master of all of them. So, Jackie, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for being here.
That's so kind. Thank you for having me.
We are so excited to welcome onto Hoops 360 WNBA champion, 10-time WNBA All-Star, former league MVP, and president of the WNBA Players Union. I mean, what can't she do? Nneka Ogumike joining us here on the show. Nneka, there's a million things I want to hit on with you, but first, I want to start with you. You're back in LA, the team that drafted you number one overall, back in the state where you went to college after, you know, a short stint in Seattle. Has returning to the Sparks been what you expected it to be when you decided to go back, I guess, what is now home in free agency?
Thanks for having me. You know, I had the privilege of being able to, you know, negotiate and go through some periods before settling on, you know, my thoughts on free agency. And I'm honored to have had options, and I'm so grateful for my time in Seattle. I think it was exactly what I needed at that point in my career. And then, you know, when I was thinking about where I wanted this next chapter to go, I was thinking about, obviously, legacy in a way that that I had been able to experience being drafted to LA, and changes that were also, you know, quite apparent to me when I was looking to see what team I wanted to join, and building towards something. And that's always been a part of my ethos, and ultimately a part of who I became in this league. And LA is a really big part of that. So I'm happy about it, and I'm excited to be back here and to continue to forge in those goals, both individually and also with this organization.
And I have to assume those goals include making the postseason and winning a championship, right? That's the ultimate goal for any player and any coach. What gave you confidence that LA was the place that you could do that?
I think that LA made some big moves, you know, especially when it came to the administration of the organization since I had last been there, that showed signs of, you know, trying to develop a winning culture. I think a lot of people don't realize that winning decisions are not just court decisions. You know, it's who you hire, how you structure the organization, the investment and the engagement. And so I wanted to be a part of not only that, but also the history that I have with the Sparks, being able to move in that direction. And, you know, we all want immediate success, but I think that we're also very much trusting the process.
And one of those big moves, at least that LA made last offseason, was making that massive push to go get Kelsey Plum. You know, one of the stars along with yourself in this league. She is a fierce competitor. What has it been like playing with Kelsey?
You know, Kelsey is one of the hardest working players that I've had the privilege of being able to not only play with, but also witness. And someone who is so incredibly disciplined and determined and also fearless is exactly what you need to develop that winning culture that, you know, the Sparks have been about and are looking to bolster. And I'm very grateful to have someone like her on the team that pushes me to kind of tap into my dog mentality. And it's quite contagious and very helpful when you're trying to get some wins.
And she spoke with the media not too long ago, I believe at some point last week. And she said, like, we need to be professionals. We need to grow up and we need mm-hmm. to play like professionals. That is not sugarcoating what is going on maybe on the court or even behind the scenes in LA. How did you take that? And how did the rest of the locker room take Kelsey's words?
It's something we talk about as a group a lot, you know, understanding that we are pros, you know, this is our livelihood. We get paid to do this. You know, there has to be a level of commitment and understanding and focus that is applied on a day-to-day basis that yields the sustainable results that a pro is expected to have. And we talk a lot about, you know, having legendary habits and understanding that how you do one thing is how you do everything. And it's something that is kind of an ongoing conversation, because there are moments when you feel either individually or collectively as a team that maybe today's not my day, or I don't feel like doing this. But what is the bigger picture? You know, what is the telescopic view that you can kind of see with those microscopic habits? And we have veterans on this team that have those types of habits, and we want to make sure that we can exercise that on a day-to-day basis, collectively as a group.
Like, looking at your team, the offensive efficiency is off the charts. Like, this team can score. Scoring is no problem. But throughout the entirety of the season, and look, it's still early in the season, but the Sparks have been consistently at the bottom of the WNBA in defensive efficiency. It's a problem that went back to last season as well. You've been around the league for a long time. You've played a lot of basketball. You've seen a lot of basketball. How do you fix what looks to be a glaring hole in your defense?
I mean, I think it's about taking it personally. Defense isn't something that needs to be taught. It's something that you want to do. And it doesn't happen without all five people on the court being locked into that. And so developing the mentality of wanting to be defensive stoppers, both one-on-one and also as a group, is something that has just have to change. And it's not something that you can turn on and off each night. We have to embody that mentality.
We are in the thick of the WNBA Commissioner's Cup. We're, you know, wrapping it up at, you know, the time of recording this podcast on Wednesday, June 17th. Commissioner's Cup Championship was on June 30th. We've seen a lot of professional leagues try in-season tournaments. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. Do you feel like the level of competition in the Commissioner's Cup is just kind of ratcheted up a little bit in the W?
Yeah, certainly, especially with the addition of teams. I know that we kind of have a super conference, but I guess it adds that element of East versus West as the league grows. You know, we're still working through some things because the West has to play more games to make the Commissioner's Cup with the uneven number of teams on the East versus West. And I'm hoping that those types of things can balance out to develop, I guess, kind of more of a level playing field. But at the end of the day, you know, if you win those games, you win those games. I think also too, you know, dealing with like the high concentration of those games early on in the season is the challenge that players have voiced. And quite notably too, because it is conference based, the back end of the season ends up being very heavy on travel for everyone. So it'll be interesting to see how that continues to evolve. But I do know that players are always going to play for a prize pool. And it's great to know that players are going to get more money in their pockets for their performance.
You can feel it. Like, you can feel the level of intensity just popping off the TV screen. But you mentioned the prize pool. And I was curious going into this year's Commissioner's Cup. Look, like, splitting $500,000, that's still a lot of money. But players are obviously making more money now. So maybe that share of $500,000 doesn't feel as big now when your paycheck is much larger versus when it was in the previous EBA. So what's the player perspective on that in terms of just the financial incentive there? Has there been maybe less of an impact, or maybe it feels less impactful since players are making more money?
I haven't heard any player say that it's less impactful. You know, I think at
cash
this point,
is cash.
Yeah, I think at this point we know that being paid your value or something equitable is where we're at. And if that means that you perform well and you win the Commissioner's Cup, then that's exactly what that means. Now, you know, I think it would be great to see that that prize pool also grows with how we've been able to, you know, negotiate higher salaries so that it is reflective of something that kind of makes, I guess perhaps a little bit more of a percentage sense when it comes to splitting a prize pool, as we consider, you know, how much the players are now making and will be making in the future.
Because I wonder that. I'm like, okay, well, they're making more, but like still, whatever your fraction of $500,000 is, like that's still a lot of money. Like, yeah, it's impactful either way. But I mentioned, money is money. Hey, never going to say no to it. I mentioned the new CBA. You are instrumental in this new CBA as the president of the WNBPA. So let me just say for the record, congratulations on getting this deal done, on having your name and your DNA etched in WNBA history, in basketball history forever. I know it's early. We're just a month and some change into this season. But have you seen your vision for this CBA start to come to life?
Yeah, I mean, almost immediately, you know, I mean, obviously we were able to see free agency shortly after we were able to, you know, come to terms. And not only that, you know, we saw the movement, we saw players getting paid and the addition of teams. And we wouldn't be able to do that with something that is always continuing to grow, which is fan engagement. You know, they gave us the leverage to be able to achieve that. And it's fun to be able to go to these different cities now and see how many people are so tapped in so early on, and how, you know, teams are really trying to be the best. You know, they're investing and engaging in ways that are more than just, you know, the roster. And I love being able to witness that in real time. Yeah. And I also believe that as time ensues, we'll be able to see more of those changes and appreciate them for what the players were able to negotiate this past year.
Because I'm sure it's been a whirlwind from negotiations to free agency to training camp in the beginning of the season. It's just been so much all at once. You haven't even had really an opportunity to stand back and enjoy all of it, I'm sure. But, you know, we can see the new contracts. We can see the popularity and the investment from the fans and from TV networks, from the league itself. What are maybe some implications of the new CBA that we as fans and people who cover the game don't see on a daily basis?
Certainly, for example, you know, the staff that takes care of the players and the teams, you know, we were able to secure a lot of guarantees in that way that perhaps might have been viewed as amenities. But we argued and successfully that they are necessities. And so we have, you know, a few more players on the roster, including the DPs, but then we also have adequate staff that can maintain the level of performance that we need to achieve what we want to achieve as pro athletes.
And it's been a whirlwind of a year for you too. You were just named Time 100 Most Influential Sports Figures. So congratulations for that as well. What does that kind of off the court accomplishment mean for you?
I'm always honored anytime there's a list or I'm named to you know, a distinguished group. I don't quite view myself that way, but I am very grateful, and I try my best, as my sister says, to receive my flowers. And I just want to be able to make things better than when I came in, whether it's on the court or off the court. But I can't say that I did it by myself. I've been able to grow into who I am today, both as a player, as president, and as a person, because of a lot of amazing women and advocates for women in sport.
You mentioned your sister, Chinne Egumike. She's the face of ESPN's WNBA coverage. She crushes it always. What does her perspective, you know, being behind the desk in front of the camera on the media side of things, like what have you maybe learned from her perspective on the media side of things?
I've learned that there's so many different, sports is a web, you know, and for someone to have such experience both on the court and then in media to show me just the impacts of sport is fantastic. You know, Chinne developed this career, which I feel was made for her, out of you know, an unfortunate injury. And she decided that she wasn't just going to rehab and wallow. She made something of herself. And as a kid, now looking back, it's not surprising that she's doing what she's doing now, but how she's been able to magnify herself in this role, I think has certainly changed what it means to be a woman in media and sport. And I always try my best to let her know how amazing she is, because I don't want anyone thinking that I'm going to do what she's doing. It's not easy at all. And she makes it look effortless. And I really appreciate the hard work that that she's helped me, you know, even as her big sister, be inspired by.
Do you guys have a little bit of sibling rivalry on and off the court?
No, we don't, actually. It's interesting. We weren't raised to be competitive against each other in our family.
It's a good thing. Nicole, we have a long season ahead of us. It does feel like we've been in the middle of the season for so long. We're only at 14, 15 games in. So what is next for you individually, and what is next for the LA Sparks as an organization?
I mean, to continue to win games and to continue to get better, to climb up as a team on those defensive ratings, and really establish this legacy of winning culture, reestablish really this legacy of winning culture in LA.
Nika Ogumike, you can catch her wearing the purple and gold for the LA Sparks the entirety of the season. And of course, the president of the WNBPA. Nika, thank you so much for your time today. Catch up with you soon. Good luck this season.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks to Nika Ogumike for stopping by the podcast. She was so insightful, so smart. It was just wonderful to get a deep dive into her world, in the world of the LA Sparks, and a little bit of behind the scenes in the CBA negotiations. So grateful to Nika for stopping by here on Hoops 360. But let's take a look forward. Some must-watch matchups that we have going down in the WNBA. And no matchups are bigger right now than the ones that we have tonight. Wednesday, June 17th, Lynx on the road at the LA Sparks, and the Aces taking on the Mercury at home. Both of those games, 10 o'clock Eastern time tip. I mentioned it earlier in the podcast, but just a refresher. The way that the Lynx can punch their ticket to the Commissioner's Cup final is if they beat the Sparks tonight and the Aces lose to the Mercury. Now remember, the Commissioner's Cup is decided by if there is a tie in the rankings. First and foremost, it's win-loss record. But if both of these two teams win tonight, they'll have the same record. The tiebreaker is the head-to-head. The Aces hold that head-to-head with a three-point win over the Minnesota Lynx. So the Lynx would need the Aces to lose tonight in order to get to the WNBA, into the Commissioner's Cup final. Excuse me. The Aces clinch with just a win tonight over the Phoenix Mercury. Doesn't matter if it's a big one. Doesn't matter if it's a small one. Doesn't matter if it's pretty or ugly. They just need to beat the Phoenix Mercury tonight. Now, if they lose tonight, then the Lynx will punch their ticket. So a lot on the line tonight in the W, but coming up on Thursday and on Saturday, Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese. Stop me if you've heard that one before. We've got the Dream going on the road at Indiana at 7:30 Eastern time. And then the Fever hit the road and go to Atlanta on Saturday for a little 1 p.m. Eastern time matinee. The Fever got the best of the Dream in their first matchup of the season just a couple of weeks ago. So do the Fever have the opportunity to potentially sweep the Dream this season and skyrocket up the rankings? Will the Dream get their lick back a little bit on the road at Indiana on Thursday? We shall see. But I know my eyes and all the eyes in the WNBA world will be on those matchups coming up. And then next Tuesday on June 23rd, Liberty on the road at the Aces. Another 10 o'clock Eastern time tip. Late for those New York Liberty on the East Coast body clock. This very well might be a Commissioner's Cup final preview, because if the Aces win tonight, they are heading to the Commissioner's Cup final to take on the New York Liberty, a battle of the heavyweights, if you will, with $500,000 on the line. So we'll keep an eye on that one as well. But so many great matchups with a lot on the line coming up this week. So make sure that you are tuned in to all of the action. But if you're not, don't worry, we got you covered, because we'll recap all of it. We will do a little bit of a preview for the Commissioner's Cup final. Who could win the 2026 championship? What will that mean for a potential WNBA finals preview? We'll get into all of that on next week's edition of Hoops 360. Thanks for joining this week. We'll see you next week.